Greetings, good and gratuitous gamers, to yet another episode of the Daily Days podcast, that actually weekly show that straddles the line between the retro and modern gaming worlds. I'm Mr. Picario, your eager host on this wistful endeavor, and today, well, I'm changing the game somewhat. Instead of talking about some random video game and related trivia, I figured I'd jump ship a bit and talk anime for a change. And not just any anime series, but perhaps the granddaddy of them all, Dragon Ball Z. Now, I'm no expert on this subject. Indeed, I'm a veritable noob when it comes to power levels and scaling the many realities that seem to have branched off from the core Dragon Ball universe, and all the various retcons and theories that revolve around the franchise's long and enduring history. In short, I'm more a dabbler than a connoisseur when it comes to this mythology, but that's changing after catching Dragon Ball Super's condensed Tournament of Power on YouTube. I've begun watching Z from the very beginning. And yeah, if my power, I mean interest level, was a 20 before, it's now easily 9,000 or more. But be forewarned, there will be plenty of spoilers for those two of you who have yet to revel in everything Dragon Ball.
Vegeta, what does the scouter say about his power level?
It's over 9,000!
What, 9,000? There's no way that can be right!
Ah, now that brings me back. For those who don't know, that clip comes from the English dub of Dragon Ball Z, the first dub from the late 1990s. Since those early days of the series, the show has undergone, at least in America, many conversions, shuffling from various dubs, translations, and performances over the years. The version I'm most familiar with actually comes from those gigantic orange brick DVD sets so popular in the late 2000s. But more on that later. For now, this is just me sharing my own Dragon Ball journey, starting an amazing almost 20 years ago. So, I first noticed the series back in the late 1990s. It didn't make much sense to me then. As fans well know, the Z series is a sprawling and often convoluted one, with interlocking episodes that flow more with the rhythm of a soap opera than, say, Batman the Animated Series. And while this format keeps viewers waiting anxiously for the next installment, it can leave newcomers feeling completely lost. This was especially so in the late 1990s, where the Japanimation boom, as it was known at the time, was just getting started in the States, and people hadn't yet completely accepted the style's often over-the-top character designs and crazy action. This was indeed true of Dragon Ball Z, what with its screaming combatants, giant space apes, and green rubbery aliens, and Kamehameha ki blasts that could wreck an entire planet. Yeah, it made no sense to me, and not knowing where to start or how to catch up, I quickly lost interest. But I never gave up on the series completely. While in college, I ended up purchasing the first two Dragon Ball graphic novels from a local comic book store, and unlike Z, these stories were far more whimsical and lighthearted, featuring a much younger main character, the Monkey Boy Goku, as he adventured around his strange world searching, of course, for the seven Dragon Balls. These early stories were fun and often hilarious, with the innocent but well-meaning Goku committing just about every social faux pas one can imagine. Childlike but incorrigible, innocent but lewd, this earlier series finally gave me some context into that Z series I had seen a few years before. And yet, the two didn't seem to mesh well at all, leaving me still rather baffled in the end. At this time, Dragon Ball Z's Buu Saga was being broadcast full force every night on the Cartoon Network. I lucked into catching the saga from the very beginning and thus began forming some semblance of an understanding concerning who these characters were, how their powers worked, and what was at stake. I wasn't completely ignorant of these matters anyway, as I had also caught the random Cell or Frieza episode in the past, but finally I could enjoy a full storyline from start to finish. And despite my intermittent time with these characters, I thought the proceedings on the whole were a lot of fun. Not great, exactly. Everything about the saga seemed to drag on longer than it should have, from the constant fights to the long dribs and drabs of dialogue. But as a daily dessert right before bedtime, I savored these bombastic delights. What's more, after Buu had been defeated and the series ended with Goku flying off with Oob, I was genuinely disappointed it was all over, even if I still missed the more comedic adventure-oriented fare of its predecessor. Funny enough, my wishes were answered, sort of, with the release of the next series, Dragon Ball GT, but we'll touch on that one later. I'm sure most assume that, after catching the Buu storyline, I immediately scrambled for Z's earlier episodes. In retrospect, I wish I had, but that Dragon Ball itch had been scratched enough where I chose to chase other anime instead. Cowboy Bebop, Trigun, Outlaw Star, The Big O, these were my new fancies, with Dragon Ball placed back on the bench. And then, as a college graduate with still no money, I decided to join the Air Force. Not surprisingly, my early military days kept me pretty busy, but during those 4 years, I was at least pretty flush with cash. This meant, finally, I could chase whatever whim caught my fancy, from vintage video game systems and anime art sales to, yep, those huge orange brick box sets of Dragon Ball Z's many chronicles. While many have since pointed out the deficiencies of these collections, from overcropped viewing angles to some inaccurate coloring, I didn't know any better and, indeed, even now, find them perfectly watchable. And watch I did. After buying the first brick, the so-called Saiyan Saga, I plowed through those initial 39 episodes with a mixture of disbelief and grand satisfaction. The animation and choreography was surprisingly rich, with scenes stretched and distorted at wild dramatic angles as characters swooshed and flailed throughout the air, shattering the mountains and canyons all around them. Characters I had found merely intriguing before now won my respect, even my heart, as main hero Goku gives his life in the very first episodes, abandoning Gohan his son in the care of his worst enemy, Piccolo. Watching Gohan then overcome his own timid nature and become a pint-sized, still reluctant warrior, and Piccolo, now his surrogate father, become something of an admirable role model, was both uplifting and inspiring. And let's not forget Krillin, the dedicated friend, Chi-Chi, the overprotective mother and scathing wife, Bulma's despair over losing Yamcha, Tien and Chiaotzu's fervent transcendent brotherly bond, even the cowardly Yajirobe's later redemption. These all left an indelible impression upon me. I mean, sure, these were some of the most over-the-top, sometimes crudely drawn and abstract characters I had ever witnessed, but I was nevertheless there with them, sharing the same intimate space, rooting as one might for their favorite football team, or moreover, one's closest friends. Perhaps most striking, however, were the Saiyans, Vegeta in particular. Although a fan favorite today, this early version of the snarling anti-hero was pure villain, a seemingly irredeemable, genocidal, cocky monstrosity who, not unlike the later Frieza, was content to let his lackeys do the fighting for him. Indeed, he even possessed a certain mischievous, maniacal quality that eventually fell away as he slowly grew nobler later in the series. But for those initial episodes, he was one nasty, unlikable dude, a murderer and planet killer both, that put a certain Darth Vader to shame. I could go on about that marvelous, gritty, rough, scratchy, sketchy art. The surprising humor of Goku's jaunt on Snake Way juxtaposed with Gohan's own misadventures in the wilderness, contrasted again with the heart-wrenching suspense resisting the Saiyans themselves. A battle that, had it been written for a Western audience primarily, would have lasted for an episode or less. Here, the drama extends for at least a dozen. Now, before I conclude, I want to play two more opening themes to this iconic series. Both are the English versions this time, as the last one I played comes from the Japanese original. This series has seen so many different versions in the States, it's a pity that I think the older ones are being lost to time. So, because I don't have the ability in this little podcast to contrast every little change in detail between all the variations, and simply it's beyond my knowledge anyway, I still think it's cool to give a taste of the differences simply through these two different openings. So, here goes. This first one is known as Rock the Dragon. Alright, well, that was loud. Now, this second take, if you will, comes from the abridged version of Dragon Ball Z, also known as Dragon Ball Z Kai. Mysteries abound, made of a deep energy. You with me, my enemies will never win. think I like the second one more, but that's just me. Anyway, after I had viewed and stewed over that first season, one could say I was converted, a true believer, if you will. One would probably also assume I immediately jumped to consume the second set, but alas, I didn't. Life got in the way, and I wouldn't return again until I stumbled upon the aforementioned GT a couple of years later. I ended up gulping down every one of its 64 episodes. That's right, I had watched the very first of the Z Saga, and was now beholding the franchise's controversial finale. Complete blasphemy, right? Maybe, but it did make for some fascinating juxtaposition. Next week, I'll share my humble thoughts on what made GT so mediocre, but really, also so worthwhile. Until then, I just want to thank everyone who stumbled through this journey with me, and until next time, this is Mr. Picari, host signing off for now.